Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Here we are Tuesday night again. Welcome back, admirable friends.
Yes, welcome.
You know what I was thinking? I couldn't believe that it was Tuesday night already. It just seemed to me like this whole week just flew by from last week. It just seemed like we just did the last show.
Yeah.
It just... Well,
that may be because of your practice with restraining all week long.
That could have been it. You think so? I don't know.
Tonight's show is going to be, I think, very full of material.
Well, I think it's really a meaty subject when we talk about endurance and patience.
Impatience.
But I think everybody can relate to patience, the word. But I think we're going to deconstruct it so that we get see it from a lot of different angles tonight.
Well, I think patience is something we're all desirous of. But how to develop patience is, I hope, what we leave our listeners with today. A practice to develop patience.
Yes.
Instead of just saying, I wish I was more patient. Mm. How's that sound?
Let's get to it. So tell me more. Okay. Well,
before we recap, do you want to talk about what you're grateful for this week?
I do. I don't mind starting. I am grateful for all of the new people that showed up at Fort Worth Meditation last Thursday night. Because just that new energy that came in, that inquisitiveness, that kind of wide-eyed wonder, what's this all about? And then when we all got together and started talking and discussing, I really do keep likening it to when you see bicycle riders going down the street and they draft off of each other.
Yes.
And that's how it feels. You're drafting off of each other.
Even the newcomers brought good energy into that room.
It was tons of good energy. And I think it really kind of resonated with me and stayed with me.
And of course, the youth.
Oh, gosh. You know, we've got some young guns there. I mean, in their 20s that are just...
really interested in pursuing this kind of lifestyle.
They are. And I just...
And where were we in our 20s? I don't think we were pursuing this.
I don't even think I was anywhere in that. I wasn't even in the same universe as these guys are with their...
Perhaps this is a function of the times. Perhaps they're smarter than we are.
I'd like to think so. But it was very encouraging. I was very grateful.
Yeah, it was. Well, I'm grateful this week for one of our board members, Allison, who has been helping us with the social networking side of Admirable Friends. As you know, it's kind of like three parts of a stool, the Admirable Friends concept. We've got the radio show, we've got the sitting group, the physical meetups, mm-hmm. and then we're getting ready to do our electronic meetups, our social gathering, our Facebook for Admirable Friends. And I met with her this week, and she had drawn out a specification broadly of what we were going to, how the system was going to look, and I just sat there and went, whoa, because she has so much expertise.
She's crazy gifted, huh?
Well, she knows all the social networking side, and she's a practitioner with the 10 Ideal Mind Qualities. So she was able to bridge those two together. And, you know, she said, well, I want to be able to set up a group or set up a team where I can pick you know, let's say I want all the women in my age group that work out of their house. I want to have a meetup and electronic discussion, and the topic's going to be, let's say, patients, you know? And so, I mean, just the whole thought process that she brought, it was just, I was so grateful to have somebody helping us with this, with that kind of capability and that level.
I'm in awe, actually, of people that can, that just, you know, do that kind of.
But she's so committed to the cause here, and it was great. So I'm grateful. Allison, if you're listening, I'm really grateful.
Very cool. Thanks, Allison.
So okay, let's recap and okay. Let's try to. Last week was on restraint. And
yeah, I wouldn't say this was like a gangbusters kind of topic for everybody because, you know, not too many people like to talk about restraint and, you know.
In America?
Well, sure. But I mean, but I think once we started to dissect it a little bit and we talked as far as the attachments to craving and clinging.
And making the difference between those two.
Absolutely. That put it in a little bit different perspective.
Because I think when people naturally think about restraint, they're saying, I got to give up all the pleasures.
Absolutely. I'll have to be a monk. I'll just stay at home. Right. And I'll never be able to do anything.
No, it wasn't the pleasures that was the problem. It was the clinging, not the clinging, but the craving for those pleasures, the wanting, instead of just being present when they occur. So I hope we made that distinction. And because it really is that wanting that gets that stress going when we examine our wants. So restraining from wanting is pretty skillful, and it's freedom. So when it's defined that way, I think I know I had some comments from people that said, I don't have a problem with that restraint the way you defined it.
Right. And that's what I was saying. I think once we dissected it and kind of looked at it from a different viewpoint and put it in context, it's not very difficult, and I think it was easy to see that we weren't saying to people, just give up all pleasures and just be joyless, if that wasn't it at all.
No. So it's the stressful part of pleasure, and that's the wanting it before it's here, you know, or not wanting it, the other side of the coin.
Right. So I thought... But it really is kind of a freeing, a liberating thing to be, to divest yourself from those cravings. Because then you can just enjoy the pleasure, and you can see the pleasure and enjoy it for what it is, right. A very pleasurable experience.
And you're not, you know, you don't have a bias going into what your expectation of the pleasure is. It's just there and you can enjoy it. So it's not an exit to monkhood or giving up the American way. It's actually gotten so connected with our way of life that we've forgotten how we can actually just be peaceful in our own skin and peaceful in our relationships and without having to want something to be different than what it is.
And if you put want upon want upon want, then you're putting a pleasure upon pleasure. Yeah. And then how do you ever experience the pleasure for just a singular experience of
kind of you keep pushing the ante up on the wants.
Yeah, it just gets layered and lost and just really.
So I think the wanting mind and addressing that last week was key. We'll circle back to that. I think once, like you say, we've got a definition of restraint down, people will be fine with it.
And a lot of these mind qualities weave into one another. It's sort of like, yes, even though we put them into 10 ideal mind qualities, and they go into 4 separate categories. They kind of like interweave and interchange, yes, and flow. It's like, you know.
Well, the reason they're so good though is they give us, and it was very, again, going back to Allison's design of a social network, they give us something to talk about versus just what I like or I don't like. And, you know, like she said, all social networks are about who I am and publicizing me and promoting me. Mm-hmm. And there's a time and a place for that. But what we're going to try to do is frame the conversation so it's not about me, it's about what I'm doing and how happy I'm living. And that's a different conversation. So having those 10 ideal mind qualities gives us some structure. So
it does. It does put it into context, doesn't it?
For our conversations.
All right. Well, I think we pretty much recapped that and touched upon all those little things. Do you want to give a definition of what?
So that's, you pretty much covered, that covers our last week, huh?
I think so.
We gave some tips, but again, the handouts are there and they're still on bbsradio.com/admirablefriends for last week's handout with a bunch of tips on how to restrain and how to discern when to restrain, when not to restrain.
And if somebody needs more information, they can always email us at hello@admirablefriends.org.
Yes. Or just go to the website of admirablefriends.org and .com send you there as well.
Okay.
So let's bring up mind quality number 9, which is the first calming quality.
That's kind of cool, the way we went from letting go to calming.
Yeah.
That really is such an interesting progression.
It's a saussure.
You love that word. That's like.
Do I?
You do.
It's just a nice transition.
It's that pause.
To a calm. We let go, we feel that relief, and we calm. Now, the definition, we're talking about the word endurance, which is really synonymous with patience. So when we hear the word endurance, we're also going to be talking about patience, and we're going to be talking about tolerance. So let's just keep those words together.
That's a lot.
Well, the reason why we don't use the word patience as a mind quality is because it's a state of being. Okay, what we're trying to do is put some words that actually have some verbs to them. So when we say, what is it we endure, or what is it we tolerate, mm-hmm. now we're into the verb side of the language, and we can practice with that, versus, I want to be patient.
Right.
What does that mean?
Right.
That's another want. That takes us back to last week's agenda, letting go of a want. We've got to get to the meat of, what do I have to do with my life to develop patience? So that brought me to the two words of endure. What do I have to endure? Or, if you like, what do I have to tolerate? Mm-hmm. So let's keep that in mind. The definition is the ability to exert oneself and remain patient and tolerant for long periods of time, as well as the ability to withstand and recover from physical or emotional stress. So,
I just had a kind of an idea that this tolerance and patience is really a very resilient kind of quality.
Yeah.
It shows how the human spirit, maybe, is a very resilient, or the human being is very resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think tolerating and enduring and being patient is an interesting quality.
And that resilience is exercised through our choices. In every moment, we have infinitely amount of choices to make. That freedom exists with all of us, and we have to keep reminding ourselves of that. You know, the big mind sees lots of choices.
Oh, that's so good.
And when you have those choices and you exercise them, then you're being resilient, then you're being tolerant, and then, of course, you're also being intolerant of certain things. So what we're going to talk about tonight is, we're not asking people to tolerate and put up with everything.
I don't think anybody can.
No. So we're talking about using that famous word discernment to decide when to tolerate things and when not to tolerate things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And in particular, the essence of tonight's discussion has to do with two types of things that we have to tolerate. Just like we always talk about the outer world and the inner world, we're going to talk about that tonight.
Okay.
What are the outer conditions that I should tolerate? How do I become tolerant, or how do I practice tolerance or patience?
When faced with something outside of myself.
Outside of myself.
Okay.
And then what about the inner qualities? And there, the inner qualities of mind and heart, we want to actually not tolerate certain things. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But
okay.
So just kind of think of tolerating the outside conditions and not tolerating the inside conditions. And it's a progression, because before we could get to the inner qualities of mind that we're ultimately gets us to the causes of our stresses,
mm-hmm.
we have to deal with the outer conditions and deal with them skillfully. So as usual, we're going to talk about that's good, because that's our daily practice. That's in life. What are the things we have to deal with, and what basically the things that we have to tolerate fall into three categories. They fall into uncomfortable feelings and sensations, uncomfortable words, unwelcome words from people, and people themselves. So those are the three things that we're trying. Those are the three outer conditions that we're trying to tolerate.
Okay. I wanted to bring up that I found something very interesting that, unlike a lot of other things, you know, too much of a good thing is bad, or, yeah, you know, everything in moderation, you know, not too much excess. Patience is one of those things that doesn't fall into that category. I don't think you can ever say I have too much. I'm too patient.
Right. Well,
do you think?
If patience,
is that a problem?
Well, no. In terms of quantity, I agree. But if the quality of the word, meaning patient, can also be an excuse for a lack of action.
Well, that's true. That's a good
point. So when we put the word on it, let's make sure
it's in the right frame.
Because, like I said, later on, we're going to be we're not going to tolerate certain things. But as far as desiring, I agree with you. Desiring patience is an overall quality that affects all of the other mind qualities.
It is. It is one of the, excuse me, it's one of those very interesting qualities that helps cultivate the rest.
Yeah. And everybody's desirous of it. I think everyone is pretty well aware that they're impatient. Our society is bred it. We've grown up that way. And so it's something we can all relate to. But in terms of just wanting to be patient, let's again break it down to some definitions.
Okay.
It's interesting that a lot of people feel that an exciting mind is good. You know, I really want to be jacked up. I want to be happy. Isn't that great, great, great? We're going to the baseball game tonight. Yeah, and those are good times. But seeking that mind that's always disturbed, so to speak, or excited, is really kind of works against our patience.
It's a lot of energy, too.
It does. It takes a lot of energy to keep that pumped up. So, and the interesting thing about patience, too, it's not only the end game, it's also the means. The means to being, to getting patient is just to be patient. Okay, so we talked about it being, it has the effect of developing all the other mind qualities, mm-hmm, and that we have to progress from outer conditions to inner conditions.
Right.
And let's put some working assumptions behind our practice.
Okay.
All right. So how are we going to use discernment? How does discernment affect our practice for what to be tolerant? Well, first of all, we have to decide what conditions we are going to endure and which we're not going to endure.
That makes sense.
Okay. And what ways are we going to endure uncomfortable situations? Again, uncomfortable feelings, bodily sensations, people, words. How discernment says, how do I endure these things? What should I endure? What shouldn't I endure?
Right.
What should I let, you know, when should I walk away from situations that, right, I cannot endure?
Yeah, when is it intolerable that I just, right, this, it doesn't make sense to endure or go any further?
Another thing that is a kind of a working assumption that we have to realize is that we all have different levels of patience. And we have different triggers.
Well, how many times do you hear that phrase, oh, she's got patience of a saint, or,
right,
you know,
she may be
like
patient
that
in one area, but she may be a basket case in another.
That's,
and this
true,
is all predicated on our past conditioning. And that's why we really have to be very mindful of not commenting on other people's
drawing
lack of patience.
Sure.
Because what you're seeing might be a total impatient area in one dimension of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of people that are physically strong and work out in the gym, but one little thing sets them off. Okay? I also know a lot of people that are very strong with the mind, and physically they don't endure a lot of things. You know, they're very impatient with activity. So, again, it's everyone has different karma or past behaviors that affects their level of patience.
This need to use our discernment to determine what we endure, what we can be tolerant or patient, is very, it equates to that serenity prayer. You know, grant me the strength to.
The prayer to know what to choose from.
Choose, and the wisdom to know
the difference between,
yes,
them. Absolutely. That's your discernment right there.
So that's,
you've always loved that prayer. You have a copy of that.
But I just drew a blank when I tried to figure it out, so go figure that one, right? But what I think is important too is, like everything else with all these ideal mind qualities, having a centering practice, having some skills as centering is very important. Whether it's reflection, whether it's a centering prayer, whether it's some form of meditation, some sort of solitary time you give to yourself so that you can use that space to develop and see these qualities.
And also remind yourself to practice. Besides tuning in with us Tuesdays or listening to the blog, mm-hmm. I mean, if you can take 5 minutes a day and do the same thing every day, just remind yourself the importance of living reliably happy and what that entails, a little reflection on that. Because so often we forget, don't we? We forget to practice.
Well, we do succumb to the daily, bombardment of what's going on. And
we have some kind of hope that that's going to make us happy.
Yeah.
And it never does. So you have to kind of work something on the side of that everyday activity to help do it. The other thing I like about practicing with uncomfortable words, physical sensations and people is it's a beautiful way to gauge the practice. One of the things we all have problems with is doubt, and we doubt whether this lifestyle is indeed working. Now, when we look through the rearview mirror, all you have to really do to gauge the quality, whether these mind qualities and paying attention to this thing works, is just look at the way you deal with people, pains. Are you doing better now than you used to do? Are you more tolerant of people? Are you more tolerant of what people say to you? Right? Are you more tolerant of physical discomforts, mm-hmm. not getting what you want? That's it. I mean, if you just use that, would know.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
right there.
It's such a beautiful meter, so to speak, is those conditions, those outer conditions on
because
those three
levels. Because I know that I can relate to that. That's a very, I can equate to that.
Yes.
So I don't think that's
Do you think your life has improved?
Arms.
Not to put you on the spot here, but you're on.
When
you look at those three things, it's pretty easy. I can see that in you. I can see that you definitely.
But it's not beyond anyone's reach. It's not beyond my reach to gauge that by looking at that. So that's a very tangible, like you said, very tangible.
But it's so easy to think, because we're not getting what we want and we have such high expectations. So when we enter a practice like living reliably happy and practicing the 10 ideal mind qualities, it's hard. You say to yourself, is this really, am I any better doing this? And it's, again, important, I think, to look, first of all, to have admirable friends, because they tell you, yeah, you're doing great, or they're observing you, so you're not in the middle of the storm, they're seeing it from the outside.
Right.
But from the inside, if you just look at the way you relate to others, people, conditions.
Or situations, too, if you say to yourself, like a year ago, I would have,
snapped.
Yeah, I wouldn't have tolerated that, or I would have said something, or I would have just, not put up with that, or I don't know. I could get going on and on and on, but
and that shows progress. Now, as you know, with a lot of our group, it's never enough. Myself included, right? It's like, oh yeah, that's progress, but I want more.
Sure.
Can you relate to that?
I can. Who wouldn't?
Who's the person you usually call me on the Willy Wonka?
Oh, Faruka. She was the one that.
Why don't you tell our listeners the story of Faruka?
Well, it's a Willy Wonka. It's a character, and it. The Willy Wonka thing is everybody wants the golden ticket so they can meet with Willy Wonka. And so Faruka, the father was getting, she was very a petulant child. She was very spoiled, demanding. And so the father would get her everything. Oh, whatever you want, Faruka, darling. And she'd say, but I want it now, Daddy. I want it now. And so, so I say,
we're all Farukas.
We're all Farukas. We want it now.
Yeah. So if we can gauge our practice that way, it's a good way. Okay, let's get into the meat of the outer conditions. What is it we're going to tolerate? We've got a few minutes here before we go for break. So let's cover a few of, let's just outline the troublesome words or the speech that we have to put up with during the day. And basically there's five categories of speech and they're kind of dualistic opposites, right? We have time.
I think we can all relate to these. I mean, we can all.
Sure. But let's put them in buckets so we have a frame for our discussion.
Okay.
So we have timely and untimely speech, number one.
Speech that's true or false.
Number two, you're either affectionate or harsh with your speech.
The speech is either beneficial.
That's a big one, affectionate or harsh. And there's a lot of middle ground there.
Mm-hmm. But right, there's gradations.
There's gradations, but affectionate or harsh is a good kind of a meter. And then we got beneficial or unbeneficial.
With the mind of goodwill or hate.
Yeah.
So that's...
That gets into the venom, five big categories
right there.
And having that harsh speech is not necessarily with hate. That's a different kind of category of speech. You see the bucket? Can you discern it?
Sure.
It's like, so. All right. So the ways we skillfully deal with the words people and pains is, first of all, we consider that we can't expect everyone to exercise good speech. So before we even start our day, what do we do, Carol?
Just give them a pass. Like, they haven't got a clue what they're saying or what they're sort of like.
Well, just, I think what we're saying, though, is that everyone, we can't expect everyone to give us the good side of those five. We can't expect during the day that everybody's going to be timely, true, affectionate, beneficial,
and or with a mind of goodwill. Tons of goodwill backing it up.
Right. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
Right at the very get-go, before we ever go out during the day, let's get our minds together and say, get ready, that isn't going to happen.
Okay.
Because don't you think we kind of expect that?
It would be nice.
But
I don't know how often. But I think maybe another skillful way of dealing with it is to step back and look at the situation. It's prevalent in daily life. Like you say, it's not going to be all positive, affectionate, true, beneficial.
Not that, but if you take a step back and you have a problem with a coworker,
okay,
chances are if that person is using harsh speech, it's not just with you and it's not personal to you.
Correct.
So you're not the only one.
That's true.
So by stepping back,
it's trying not to take it personal, because obviously this is, you know, they're doing it for one, they're doing it for many.
So when we take that step back, we broaden our mind and we see that you're not the only beneficiary. That's just the way that person is operating. Yeah? Think about this, a never-ending supply of harsh words, troublesome people, and painful sensations. I used to say that all the time. You get one person is troubled, you seem to resolve that situation, then another one comes over the hill.
Mm.
So it's an unlimited supply. Again, thinking about that, recognizing that, and not wanting it to be different is part of the tolerance that we're exercising with these people. The mind states that we have are broad, and thinking about it in a big way help us tolerate.
But our actions could also turn that whole situation around, you know, because sometimes misery loves company, disharmony breeds disharmony, especially if it's like a feeding frenzy. You know, it's sort of like the mob mentality. If we're the ones to break away and have the positive and beneficial and timely speech, it's infectious, and it can change the discourse, whether it's in work or whatever kind of a group or school or wherever we are. I think people see the difference and they tend to take note of it.
Okay, another good strategy when we face uncomfortable situations, either words, people, or even in our pains in our body, is to try to step out of our own narrative. If you listen to yourself and what your mind is saying to you, normally there's a narrative attached to the uncomfortable situation.
Like, why is this happening to me?
That's one.
Okay.
I got plenty of them. Give me another one.
I can't believe they're doing
this.
She's saying this to me, or they're saying this, or...
He's such a jerk. Right, there's a narrative associated with every uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, when we're caught in that narrative, we're behaving and we haven't stepped out of the situation. So we're not being tolerant at all. We're actually participating in the dance.
Well, you're too close to it at that point. It's like it's one and the same. It's like a film that's on your body. You know, you've actually taken on that persona.
It's the actor versus the director's point of view, right? Stop being the actor of your play and become the director. So step out of your narrative, whatever your conversation is, and try to notice that narrative. And just noticing sometimes stops the narrative, doesn't it?
Well, it does put a space, a kind of a pause, right?
And then we can think about the other more constructive ways. Let's say all of a sudden, again, we've got an uncomfortable worker, mm-hmm. and there's a narrative going on. Oh, he's driving me crazy, he's at it again, or she's at it again. You notice the narrative, and then you catch yourself in the narrative, and then what do? You can think, well, he does this all the time, It's not just happening to me. You can get to more of the constructive thought processes to let go of the unwelcome. And that's tolerance. That's the tolerance you're building. So you shift away from the narrative into the more constructive, broader view, different way of looking at things. Again, many choices you have. You don't know these choices, do you, when you're in a narrative?
No.
You're stuck. You don't understand these choices you have.
You're just too close to it. You're in the thick of thin things or something like that.
You took the hook.
Yeah. Yes.
We have these hooks everywhere in our life. You took the hook. And you're in talking either in your head or with the person, trying to win your point of view. Again, uncomfortable, stressful. All it is a simple step out of the narrative. Look at the situation differently. What are my choices here? I can choose to listen. I can choose to walk away. I can choose to not engage. Lots of
and
choices.
That's winning too. I mean, engaging and getting your point across in order to win doesn't necessarily mean it's a win, capital W.
Right.
Stepping away, making the right choice is also a win.
Yeah, it's different. It's situational. It doesn't mean you lay down and take it all the time.
No,
either.
But the one comes with a tremendous amount of stress. And the other win comes with, you know, the confidence and the knowing that it's like, you know, I don't have to engage. It's not that big a deal.
On that point, let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be back in a couple minutes.
All right.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Last stroke of that piano.
I know, it's lovely. We're back with all our admirable friends.
And we're back to, again, what do we practice to develop patience? And we're talking about, in particular, where we show, where we endure, what we endure, what we tolerate in terms of conditions we face every day. Mm-hmm. We're not to the inner qualities of mind yet. We're still on the external events that happen to us in terms of the three biggies being the words people say, the bad feelings we have, physical feelings, mental thoughts, mental sensations, feeling lousy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the people in our lives are difficult. So we just got done talking about the narrative. So, Carol, why don't we give another tip here of how to deal with, or an example?
One of the things that I might be skipping to the end, but developing a sense of humor for the situation.
Yes.
I love humor. I love to laugh. I find sometimes because they say when you laugh, you build in those endorphins. It's like running, you know, right, where you get that runner's high. But when you laugh, you have that chemical that makes you feel good. And
yeah.
So, to laugh it off or to laugh, I mean, of course, you don't want to laugh in somebody's face and then anger them even more. I mean, that would probably not be a good thing. But you can see the just the real ridiculous in the whole situation. It's like, seriously, really?
Right.
You know?
Well, yeah, in that situation. But I'll give you an example that when you bring that up. That I remember my brother and I, when we were with my dad when he was dying, and we were house sitting, and you know, he was going through liver cancer, and it was kind of an event that happened. I'm not going to describe it in detail, but we got laughing, and it really gave, not laughing, giggling, but just a relief from all the stress that we were dealing with while he was, you know, living his last moments, you know. And it was, so there is a room for humor in this, isn't there?
I think so. But I think, don't you think that's sort of like kind of a bodily response too, that kind of maybe the antidote for stress or
You can only handle so much.
Yeah. I don't think we tend to look at humor as one of those tools.
Yeah.
But
and again, it's infinite choices we have. When we have our minds collected during these outer conditions, there's an infinite amount of choices.
Right. It's like a bag of tricks. I mean, you can just pull anything out and just...
That's why I say, as this Admirable Friends gets going, you're always on call. What are my choices? If I can't figure them out, there's a friend that can help bring me five different choices. But even the fact that you start thinking about what are my choices, the question becomes the answer. Remember in our Zen training?
The beauty is you have choices. Whereas before, it was just stress, just going down that very narrow tunnel.
But
the question,
the
misery.
The questioning is the answer. What are my choices? See, the moment you ask, what are my choices, you've stepped out of your narrative.
Yeah.
That participation with the dance that's got you redhead or uncomfortable.
Yeah. That's great. So that was, I know that was jumping ahead, but.
I'm going through a pain in my knee and I'm whining about my knee. All of a sudden, I shift, catch the narrative, and I'm not the only one to have a bad knee. Other people have bad knees. Next thing is...
Is it really that bad?
Yeah.
It's kind of...
It's not that bad. Then you see somebody in a wheelchair and you're saying, well, I don't have that bad. You see, there's lots of choices to change your day around.
That's a great one.
How about wishing goodwill? We've already covered goodwill as a mind quality. And again, goodwill is such
goodwill a... Goodwill is like our utility player in the whole team.
Yeah, it's your designated hitter.
Yeah, it really is.
It works.
I mean, It's key.
Wait, again, for our listeners, goodwill is wishing others find and act upon the causes of reliable happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you're having somebody that's having a real bad hair day, wishing them goodwill helps.
Plus, that frees you up as the person. I mean, you're not in a narrative about you. It's not about moi.
Yeah.
You know, it's about somebody else that, you know, I'm wishing... Once you open that hand and let go, it's hard to, you know, have that grip.
That's why goodwill works so many times.
It's
goodwill, generosity, any of the giving mind qualities where we proactively reach out of our own world, it fixes things. It's fast.
Yeah.
Let me say, it treats a symptom. When we get into the inner qualities and how we actually work on causation of repeating stressful events that we have to endure. We'll get to that.
There are another kind of one is using our common sense to avoid dangers. There are some real obvious ones. I mean, toxic people, dangerous situations. I mean, some of those are like tap-ins in the whole scheme.
How about you should tell the kids, don't go out after midnight.
I used to say when they had curfew and they used to complain, I used to say no good comes about after staying out after midnight.
Right.
And that's, you know.
That's just common sense. Stay away from certain bars, certain areas. Again, tolerate. These are exercises of develop patience. Over time, you're going to look through the rearview mirror and say, wow, I really am more patient than I was. I didn't just jump on the group told me to go out in the car and jump in the car and I went out for, you know.
Yeah, it's the exercising of that discernment.
This is one I like is because I'm kind of a visual person and I like when the unwelcome voices come. I have this mantra that says it's the breeze of another's voice. That's a nice term to me because I kind of visualize my mind like a screen room where the voices just pass through the screen like air coming through the screen.
Hmm.
So I visualize that, and the voices don't even land.
Well, I haven't gotten there yet.
Really?
Yeah, I can't do that. You know, I can't get to the part where it says, like, oh, you know, that sound, that unpleasant sound, you know, I'm listening. I don't.
Well, if you actually slow it down, you're going out to that unpleasant sound, and you're going out after it. It's just there. Remember, it's unpleasant to you, and it might be pleasant to somebody else. So
that's true.
The sound is the sound. You're going out after it. So you have a choice not to go out after it.
Right. You can frame it any way you want.
Throw it in the background. That's what I do with that screen image. I have a screen room, and it's just like the breeze of the room. Have at it.
Yeah. Well, it kind of leads me to the you were talking about the mantra, but and I'll let you tell the story afterwards, but the pain is mandatory, suffering is optional. I love that phrase.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go into that?
Okay, go ahead.
Do you want to tell the story of the second arrow?
No.
It starts with the mantra, pain is mandatory, suffering is optional. And that's really comes from the story of the second arrow. And I don't know who wrote this. I think it was one of our students that when we were teaching in the Golf Academy. But I have, it says, I've always had a profound respect for individuals who can bounce back after defeat. This is because I used to find it extremely difficult to do so. I used to run the scenario over and over in my head, usually beating myself up in the process. My coach told me the story of the second arrow. The pain we feel when something happens to us is likened to being shot by an arrow. It's referred to as the first arrow. It goes that a second arrow always follows the first. It is said that the second arrow can be far more painful than the first. The second arrow is the suffering we create around the pain of the first arrow. It's the psychological torment we inflict on ourselves. I trained so hard and I should have won. I can't believe I didn't get that job. I can't believe it's over, etc. The first arrow is more often than not out of our control. However, the second arrow is completely within our control. It is our choice whether or not we want to be shot by the second arrow. So that's the pain would be the first arrow.
Right.
And suffering being...
out of our control,
right.
And but the second arrow is what we bring to the whole kind of thing,
and that gets us from the external aspects of what we endure, and we're, you know, to the internal.
Because really, the reason we're tolerating a lot of stuff outside of ourselves is because it's like that 50% rule. We can only control our 50%.
Right, but if we're spending all of our days working with letting go of the narrative all the time, we're dealing with the outer conditions, the outer conditions, the outer conditions. We're not seeing the dance that we're playing to create those conditions
right.
in the
and
first place.
And would you rather be spending your energy on your 50%? Right. Like, no wonder we're so exhausted.
Right, so that's where that whole story of the second arrow gets us to shift from the outer world of uncomfortable people, words, and sensations to the inner world. What are we doing to create the situation in the first place? See, the symptom is the outer conditions a lot of times, and the cause is inside. So what are we bringing to the table in terms of perceptions and understandings and biases? It's a whole big world, Carol.
And more and more and more.
Right. But you could see how you'd never get to that inner world unless you've done some skillful things with the outer world. You've got to calm the noise down. So dealing with the outer conditions and learning how to get along with others, even though we should have learned it when we were in the sandbox,
mm-hmm.
we still got to go to work and get along with others. And I know you listeners out there, we all do it. We fight with coworkers all the time. We have opinions, and if it's not public fights, it's a narrative going on in our heads. Okay. And we have to learn how to skillfully deal with that, knock some of that chatter down, that narrative down, and then get to the inner world of more of a, and then patience gets even more refined.
Mm-hmm.
And this
it's like eating an elephant one bite at a time. I mean, it's not going to be eradicated overnight.
And it's not like you're going to work all on the external and get to the internal.
We see a little bit of gain. Like you said, we gauge it. You know, we go on. We see another little gain. You know, attaboy, pat on the back. Let's keep going.
The real big ahas in the practice, though, are in the inner world. When you see what you're adding to cause the stress in the first place.
Well, because that's where your leverage is.
Yes.
And that's why the gains are so important. Because you see it firsthand. You've experienced it. You get the confidence to keep going. That's your 50%. How could you not be proud of yourself when you can do that?
Right. And it builds the conviction in the whole practice, because the common denominator in all of these mind qualities is we work from the outer world to the inner world. We use the outer conditions to help us deal with the inner world. And the inner world is where the reliable happiness is found. Whereas the big kiss and tell, or the big lie, is that by managing all the deck chairs in the Titanic, all these outer conditions, we're going to be happy. We haven't.
I don't think so.
It has never happened that way. So the inner world is where the reliable happiness lies. And however, we have to work through the outer conditions to get there, you know, and skillfully work through with the help of others. And then it's not just a linear sequence. It's up and down a staircase. So there's times when you have to work with, because I've got triggers that I have to work on the outer world. And then
there's situations, right, where you can't extract yourself from the situation or work, or it's just not.
No. Well, that beautiful
practical
thing I was saying, and you were sitting there in awe saying the breeze, when I talked about the breeze, and those are just words. Yeah, that works for some people. That doesn't work for me with all people. Mm. I've got some triggers out there where some people really can get my code, and there's no screen room visualization going on.
There's no screen room.
No.
Big enough?
No. Dead honest.
But that's, yeah, I mean.
That's the way it works. That's the way the practice really works.
But the beauty is, It works some of the time, and you're aware of it, and you can use it. That's a tool.
Yes, and as you keep, you know, as you keep working the outer conditions, you eventually let go of that narrative because you've seen it enough. It's like seeing a bad movie over and over again. So, and that's where, over time, the patience is developed, because you've endured that activity. You've endured it. And where you don't endure, or you don't tolerate, is a better word I like, are these unwanted mind qualities. You know, when you see hate, or you see excess wanting or greed, or you see anger, or you see even ignorance when you're ignorant, don't be tolerable of those situations. Be honest with yourself. This is not a welcome mind quality. I'm not saying you fix it right away, but you can't tolerate that, because you'd be deluding yourself. And that's what the mind tends to do. It tends to gloss over these situations. And we don't want to beat ourselves up, you know, because we think we're rating ourselves bad when we see an unwanted mind quality. But if we learn to look at it clinically, mm-hmm. through the practice, that this is an emotion that...
But this doubles back onto what we did last week about restraint, because we said we keep performing behaviorally the same thing over again because we get that pleasure from it.
Yes.
So we've trained ourselves to just keep going at it. So, but now with patience, it's intolerance. It's like, you know what? That's just not going to cut it. That's not a quality that you really want to.
It's beneath me.
Wow.
That's what you have to say. It's what I would call skillful use of shame. And again,
that's really like, yeah. Wow.
And that's the only way you're going to begin uprooting this stuff. Now, some people can't absorb all that at once. I can't absorb it all. It's a progression. You work from the outer, you get to the inner. But when you get to the inner world, you see that you're playing a part in this dance. And you can't be tolerant of those things. And then it's not like they're going to be fixed overnight, but when you say, this is not acceptable, you're on the road to fixing it at that point, because you're not in denial.
Well, and then you have that kind of conviction, or that, what is that word I'm looking for? I can't even remember.
Persistence?
Could be.
Yeah.
There's something that came in, but I can't put my finger on it, so.
Hey, let's take a call.
Oh.
Let's break it up. Tom is on.
Hey, buddy. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tom in New Hampshire here.
Good to hear from you, Tom.
Hey, how about, can I talk about last week?
Sure.
Well, I'll talk about craving and then maybe try and relate it to patients. And you can let me know how I did here with that.
Yeah.
Buddy, as you know, I bike sometimes. And
right.
We've had discussions about, you know, and people have to get the picture. I'm in New Hampshire. We have hills and our roads aren't nice and smooth like folks down there. But so I've ridden this 33-year-old 10-speed for years and years and years, and I've always believed that's all, you know, I ever need. And so lately I started doing some longer rides, a couple of 50-milers, and feeling, you know, really, really beat up on my 30-pound steel bike. And so at the same time, I'm coming into a small little inheritance, and most of the money I'm going to be practical with. And I started thinking, you know, maybe I should get myself a nice bike. And I justified it on, well, I'm not really spending my hard earned money on it. And, you know, I could really use it because, you know, I've had back surgery and, you know, I'm getting older. And, yeah, so I got it all justified. I'm going to get a really comfortable bike and put a fast bike, too. So far, so good. I started researching the bikes, and I found this one bike that I really fell in love with. And I found myself, in the last couple of days, I've been researching. I found myself last night, I couldn't sleep. And I said to myself, you are craving this bike. And all of a sudden, I'm saying, all you guys talked about last week, I'm actually doing. You talked about last week, you can do wrong, I'm like doing. But the good news is I think I caught myself, and I kind of backed myself off. I said, you know, I'm not going to think that much about this bike. You know, if I get it, I get it. I'm trying to back off. Now you're talking tonight about patience. I think that's pretty good. So I'm actually down in my basement now, and I'm looking at my 10-speed bike, which is up off the floor, and I got a cover over it so it doesn't get dusty. And I said, you know what? That's the authentic me. I'm taking care of this bike that I bought 33 years ago for $200. And when I get on that bike, I ride it for the joy of just working out on the bike. And I told myself now, I'm not going to get the new bike unless I can treat the new bike the same way. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
I think I got some of that from you last week. And now I'm trying to say, okay, I'm not going to be patient. I'm not going to, you know, rush things. I'm not going to crave it. I'm just going to, if it happens, it happens, and I'll enjoy it for what it is. So
that's
a cool
story.
Good. And I do thank you guys for, you know, because I would not have recognized that if it hadn't been for your session last week. I would not have recognized that was going on within myself. So
it's
thank you.
It's a great story. Thanks for sharing it, Tom. It's interesting, though, when you drop the craving that you were able to get to the qualities of the biking that meant most to you versus just buying it for buying sake. So,
right.
You know, so, and you used patience, so you might indeed get the bike. It's not a question of whether you should or shouldn't.
But it's
just you shifted
right
to a more quality.
What made him happy.
Yeah, he got to a discernment.
Yeah.
Which was really good.
My expectations, I think now I'm thinking, will be more in line, because if I build it up, this is going to be like the greatest bike ever, and I get it.
Yeah.
I'm setting myself up for failure. I'm spending all my time enjoying the bike before I get it, and then, instead of just get it, take it for what it's worth. You know, I'm fortunate if I'm able to get it. It is what it is, and I'll go out on a ride and just enjoy all the things I should be enjoying about the ride.
Right.
And that's the nature of Laomi and the physical activity and what it's doing for my mind and my body.
Right.
And
that
so
might, that might, that might lead you to a cross training bike versus a, you know, where I heard you say when you were in the meat of the wanting, hey, I can go faster, right? And now all of a sudden you've shifted from fast to, right, the exercise associated with it. Is that what I'm hearing? You know, so that might affect your buying decision too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
the type of
really
bike.
Finding out what's really the motivation to even do this in the first place? And is it authentic? Is it, you know, does it make sense for me where I want to go in terms of how can I be happy? Because I have to live my life try to live my life not based around possession. Try to live my life based around being and, being happy with what I have, being, you know, but at the same time trying to be a hard worker and improve my situation. Yeah. But, recognizing that there's more important things in life than the car you drive, or the house you live in, or the bike you ride, it was just interesting. I got myself a little away from that. And, but I recognized based on what you guys talked about last week, what was going on.
Well, thanks for the story, Tom. Everybody can associate with that story.
I think that's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant just story. It was just very timely.
Whatever happens, happens with the bike. But thanks for sharing it with us, Tom. And
thanks
for calling
Tom.
I'm glad it was
helpful. Keep up the good work.
Hey, take care. Alex, online too.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, buddy. Hey, Carol. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Well, I really like the topic of impatience or patience, however you want to put it. And if I could just share an experience that I had, and it brings me back years ago to when I was in college, and I was sitting, I found myself sitting in a room with, 50 other people and a professor up on the stage speaking about a topic. And it comes to a point where the professor would then ask a question or lead into something that a topic that would then evoke a lot of discussion. And I began noticing on certain occasions that my heart rate would start to beat. What preceded that was the notion that I had something of great value that I wanted to share, or that a point of view that I thought, I can't miss. This is going to just blow everyone away. And as I got into it, in my mind, my heart rate started to intensify, and I could feel the beating of my chest internally. And more often than not, I was able to use my heart rate to kind of really calm myself, become patient, and understand really where my thoughts were, where they were coming from, were they of value, and really use that as a point to bring about some discernment as to whether or not I really had something to share, or if it was just a personal statement that I had felt like interjecting. And so I now even find in groups sometimes when I get this impatient feeling to really say something or feel that I've got something that just needs to be said, that I usually find when my heart rate kicks up and that pounding occurs, that more often than not, it's a good time for me to just kind of take a deep breath, calm down, reassess what it is that's going on, and then I can make a better judgment as to whether or not I should go forward.
So it takes you out of the narrative.
Your body's, your
body's taking you out of the narrative, right?
Exactly. Exactly. When you said taking you out of the narrative earlier, that's exactly what it did. It removed me from that that automatic response kind of feeling. So
it's amazing.
Great stuff, guys. Take care.
Isn't it? Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks,
Alex.
It's
amazing how much the body, the breath, paying attention to the breath and breathing is a bridge between the body and the mind. And
there's a lot of precursors,
right?
Like Alex was saying, there's breath, there could be, the hair on your arms, the tingling. Sometimes I get a tingling between my shoulders, kind of thing like that. So
I forgot to ask him. I want to wonder how much of his meditation practice helps him, whether he was aware of those body sensations when he was young, or whether his meditation practice indeed helps him practice with those body sensations. But there's two different great examples, right? Tom thinking it through.
Mm. Two great stories.
And ways that they tolerated, exercised patients. But again, what we're talking about is a practice. We got to keep reminding ourselves. We're practicing tolerance. That's the verb. Or we're enduring. We're not practicing to want to be patient.
Patience. We have to actively do it.
We have to do things to make, and then look through the rearview mirror and basically look at the three biggies. And let's close on this. You know, am I able to put up with uncomfortable physical situations, mm-hmm. sensations, people, words? Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. And we didn't get into all the inner qualities, but you know, it was, boy, that hour went by fast.
It did. It's an awesome topic too. You know, it's just so full of stuff. I don't know, maybe for futures we could think about maybe breaking it down into two different shows.
Yeah, and bringing in some guests sometime to talk about inpatients. You could take in some professional athletes, how they develop patients, what practices they have,
what tips they have.
Yeah. And then, of course, the discussion is going to help when we have that social network together. You could just see from these discussions, it's going to be really great when people can actually talk about this stuff. That is shifting the conversation.
It is shifting the conversation, and they're very timely and beneficial and truthful.
Yeah.
So that's key.
Well, it's time to say goodbye and remind all of our listeners that, first of all, we're grateful to have you out there.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You know, you're here. We know we can feel it. Cal and I love being here on Tuesday evenings.
We do. I do look forward to it.
Yeah, it's a nice time. And you can go to www.admirablefriends.org or .com. And get all the information about the company, the show, or email us. If you write to hello@admirablefriends.org, Carol gets a copy and I do, and one of us will respond. And look forward to hearing from you all. And thanks again. Enjoyed tonight. And hope you all practice tolerance during the week.
Yes.
And remember to look through that rearview mirror when you're doubting this road to reliable happiness, because it's really happening. You are improving. Just look back. You are getting more patient.
All right.
Take care.
Till next week. Good night.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.